Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat. Spirited conversations with interesting people. There we go. My name is Chris. I'm your host. And this is AJ Hoffman, the AJ Hoffman. He's not in this episode. I just saw him outside. We're a few drinks in, so we figured we'd sit down with this introduction. And he's about to have Sugar Ray Leonard in here.
Yeah, hard times. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya a week or two ago, and Sugar Ray Leonard today. My job's very tough.
You've had the week of a lifetime. I mean, Jesus Christ, Sugar Ray Leonard, Oscar De La Hoya.
I've met De La Hoya.
This chair? What's the figuration?
Yeah, so when we do it, the table turns. So we've sure. And he'll probably be in your chair.
So
you'll have the same chair as Sugar Ray Leonard.
I figured we could give you a plug here since we're having a drink together. The name of your show, when's it on? When can people watch you interview Sugar Ray Leonard?
You can watch it on SportsMap. I'm not sure, SportsMap.com. I'm not sure how they'll cut it up. That's not my department.
Do they put it in the podcast arena?
It'll definitely
be
there.
On podcast arena.
My show's on from 4 to 7, though. We'll play that interview today on my show. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. So
I wasn't sure it was going to be on the Blitz.
It will be. We'll play it on the Blitz today.
I've got a listener that listens to every episode, Nicholas Talamantes with Four Roses Bourbon, who is such a fan of you.
Awesome.
And he is dying to sit down with you guys. So if you are a Four Roses Bourbon fan, you definitely have an easy win there. So,
okay.
we'll have to get him in here. So this week's episode, we kind of sat down with two longtime local guys, Travis Whitmire of Whitmire Distilling, longtime supporters of you guys.
Yes. Both of those guys are long-term supporters of me. So, yeah, I was the door opens and it's people I knew came out. It was very fun.
And it was hugs instantly.
Yeah. Razul and I go way back as well.
So. Razul and Travis are great, great guys. And this episode features, so Razul's with Buffalo Bayou Brewing Company. Travis and Razul did something that I don't think has been done yet. And a brewery and a distillery partnered up and made an American single malt together. Now, you've got great brands like Ranger Creek out of San Antonio who makes both Ranger Creek Brewing and Ranger Creek Distilling, but that's all in-house. This is the first time that these guys did it just for shits and giggles. I'll say it anyways. So these guys got together, made an American single malt. We featured on this episode. We kind of walked through the whole thing. And then we talk about pretty much every aspect of all three tiers of the system. There's this big battle going on right now with beer and the distributing tier and being able to take stuff home from the brewery. And basically, we did what my favorite thing is to do, is where I kind of shut up and the guest, Razul, he just talked for an hour and 15. It was beautiful. I loved every second of it. So we've got the Whiskey Social's in full swing. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but we just released a tasting of four different 40-year-old single malts at the event at no extra cost. No extra cost, all included. You can taste through $15,000 of single malt whiskey for the price of admission. We're pretty excited about it. So check out the details of that at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com or Eventbrite. Get your tickets as soon as possible. We are 80% sold, something like that. We definitely are – I think we're going to – I'm hoping we kind of sell out before rodeo, but I doubt it because this is the largest rodeo in the U.S. Other than that, I think that pretty much covers everything, iTunes, Google Play, and without further ado – Travis Whitmire of Whitmire's Distilling and Razul with Buffalo Bayou Brewing. Cheers. Thanks so much for being on.
Oh, of course, brother.
Yeah,
of course.
Razul.
Always good to see you.
Travis. We do have quite a few listeners out of state who may not know anything about you too. So I will, like we said, I will do the interview and then at the beginning I'll do the introduction about who you guys are. But you guys have been early in on the craft beer movement here in Houston. You guys have been killing it for a while. And really early in on the distilling movement here in Houston, you were the first in the Houston area. Now, I still...
County, yeah.
I Houston area. I think it's... If the Houston Bourbon Society can allow people who are Houston adjacent and spring counts, then you being unincorporated Houston counts as Houston. I think it's literally... I'm not going to say the word I want to say. I think it's dumb that anyone would argue just because it's an unincorporated Houston when it's literally, if you were to move the arm of a clock from 10 p.m. over to 2 p.m. Well, 2 p.m. is still Houston. That, for some reason, the boundaries and, you know, on that side of Houston is still Houston, but the boundaries on this side of Houston is not. And it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. So first in the Houston area is what I like to say. Houston, unincorporated area. But you, Yellow Rose, I'm dying to get Houston Ferris in. He's been a long-time listener to the show. I've always kind of had an appreciation for his just everything about him just seems like a really great guy.
Yeah.
And having, of course, you two on. You guys were all early on. So, I mean, Buffalo Bayou started in...
Yeah, 2012. We sold our first keg January 27th, 2012.
And you guys were 2012 too, right?
We're right at the same age. Literally. Yeah. They've got a birthday this weekend.
Seven years ago on Saturday, on Sunday.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So, 7 years in April.
Yeah, I knew it was April 2012. And then I think Yellow Rose opened later that year. Was it July? Or was it a year later?
So, no, they beat us by a few months in being permitted.
Sure. With permits
that they moved into the city. And that happened, I don't know, what, 3-4 years ago?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, it's I didn't realize that wasn't their original location.
No, they started up in Pinehurst. Kind of.
I'm not even sure where Pinehurst is.
North of Tomball.
Okay, I know where Tomball is.
Oh, wow.
Part of the show is definitely drinking, so let's get started.
Yeah.
This is the first single barrel, the Blue Label. That's first single barrel that they did outside the distillery. As you see there, it's got all the proper required information filled out.
Of course.
Nice job on the label, Chris.
Yeah.
See how it's faced away from the camera? that was the HBS's for single barrel. I actually designed that label. We submitted it.
Okay. So let's just talk about what the word design means, because I don't have a dictionary in front of me.
So,
but I have a plain white label.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a blue and gold label. So would you say that you chose
the color blue, scheme, the wording, and the give me
wow.
First of all,
Chris, man, genius, you know what is amazing.
I'm gonna have Spindle Tap on next time.
It only took four minutes, we got a timer.
I've always loved Travis's white label design.
So what
we did,
have you seen our OG labels? I designed them in PowerPoint, dude. It's ridiculously stupid.
Microsoft Art Paint. I took his label and I wanted the colors reversed, some the logos obviously much bigger. Basically, I took his label that he did in Microsoft Word and I wanted it to be a little bit more bold and popping. And then, of course, I think it was yours or Chris's idea for the wax. You're like, we can do any wax you want. So, I mean, it bore this beautiful beast, and then all of a sudden it kind of opened the store for single barrel. I begged him for barrels for years. And he was like, I can. And then we wanted to make sure when you're dealing with who your number one clients are, you got to give them first priority and stuff. And we killed two birds with one stone and we offered it to Specs. And that opened the door for my relationships with Specs. We sold through that barrel in 47 minutes.
Oh, I know.
And it would have been 100% would have been 15 minutes or less.
I was watching
if you didn't
Facebook.
Sign each bottle.
Yeah. I was watching on Facebook and missed it and was livid. I was so pissed.
If you had made a call, I'm sure Travis would have kept the bottle.
Well, you know, no, I don't think that's accurate because I wouldn't make that call. As one entrepreneur to the next, I'd be like, no, go make that money, man. Because every 2 weeks you got to make payroll. And then 2 weeks from now, you got to make payroll again. So I wouldn't ask for a free bottle. I would have gotten in line. I just had other things to do. I was just like, oh man, I can't believe I missed it. And now that I'm drinking it,
it's a chocolate bottle.
Have you not had it before?
I'm even more. No.
You've definitely had my bourbon before.
Yeah. Well, I've had all your stuff, but you know, I haven't had this bottle. This is unbelievable.
It's a chocolate bomb. It's always this. I've always said, I think that in terms of any kind of trope about Texas whiskey, Whitmire's bucks that trend. And you were the first, not the only one anymore. I mean, have you tried Lone Elm?
No, I just saw that post the other day. I was like, okay, now that's something I got to try.
I've been obsessing about their wheat whiskey. Now, it's a wheat whiskey, so I don't know what the mash bill is, but they have a cast strength single barrel they offer for like $45 or $40 or something. And it was so surprisingly phenomenal. Texas has like a, like I said, this stereotype with the way kind of like a young corn oil, heavily, you know, small barrel influenced. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but there's, as years have gone on, more and more distilleries have kind of figured it out. Barrel strength, Ranger Creek is phenomenal. Iron Root, they're killing it. You're killing it. I mean, just all these places. Dude, Balcones, yeah. I got this bottle. I haven't tried it yet. I've been dying to try it. So it's the new Froak, which is I believe it's French for frog's ass, and no, it's French oak. But the they did this famous release a few years back that everybody was so proud of. And it goes for like crazy money on secondary right now. So they did another French oak release of their single malt, and I'm excited to – I finally got my hands on it. I'm excited to drink it. So, yeah, just everyone's killing it right now. And of course, I mean, you know the beer scene here. It's absurd, the beer scene right now. So
yeah, it's really lifting up. It's nice too. You know what's awesome is so we're opening the new facility, and that's got 100% of our focus. So Alex Doughton and I, you know, two of my partners, the three of us went up to Portland and Seattle to just get some recon going.
Sure.
We hit, I think, 34 breweries in 2 days. Like, that's not even an exaggeration. We were
a lot of carbs.
Yeah. We went with a list. We were on – it was work, as ridiculous as that sounds, but it was work. And I was so disappointed and underwhelmed by the liquid in Portland and Seattle that I came back – with the bigger ego than I had even before going there.
Sure. You said 34 in 2 days?
Yeah.
That's absurd. We did five distilleries in 3 days, and I was exhausted. When you say it's work, it really is.
I did not finish a beer. I'm talking – I didn't finish a 5-ounce sample until about 7 o'clock on the first day, because most of the beer I was drinking was undrinkable. It was not up to our quality standards. And I was just like – the entire time I was just like, man – every day I don't tell Ryan how amazing his liquid is. I'm taking him for granted. I need to like – it's like
– you start texting him I love you messages while you're in Portland.
You know, it's like these are those moments when you realize that you've got a hot wife who's awesome and you went to a trashy strip club and you're like, ah, man, that was not worth $20. That wasn't worth $20. I'm going to nail Mother's Day this year. That's a plan. That's how I felt coming back from Seattle drinking other people's liquid.
That is such –
Ryan is just killing it. He's just the next freaking level right now.
That is such an appropriate
and deeply offensive.
Not offensive, like, because, you know, like, I
oops. We're editing that part out.
Right? We haven't talked about this. I haven't talked about it publicly. I don't know if I should, but I'm gonna say it anyways. But I've always been so anti strip club for the simple fact that it makes me sad every time.
I always walk out feeling worse than I walked in.
Yeah, that's depressing.
I haven't been in years, but
been in forever, and hopefully not again.
They were bachelor parties. I went for bachelor parties, and I never enjoyed them. And the one time, the best experience I had is they had a pool table in the back, and me and this other guy who also didn't enjoy strip clubs, we played pool the whole night, and it's this sad, pitiful pit. Now, if you go do it, that's fine. Like, I don't judge people who go. That's your business. But you're absolutely right, where you feel like you start glad I'm married to this beautiful woman who's way out of my league, and I'm. You miss your kids. Like,
if you feel like strip clubs are depressing, go to 10 Barrel in Portland, Oregon, because I was looking forward
to crap.
It.
You mentioned the name of the brand.
You're like, oh man, I'm excited about this and this and this. They got the GABF medal and everything. I got up there and it was the biggest letdown of my life. Sure. It was like probably the way a woman feels like when I first dropped trout first time with her, you know?
And there we go.
Like, oh wow.
Wow. I guess this is the friend. AJ episode.
Was that anyways, no. It's just a disappointment. You get there, you're like, this? I just trimmed my beard this morning. Like, I was expecting this to be awesome.
Yeah. You know? It's this I feel the opposite with Texas beers. We're still on such an infant stage compared to beer. You know, I always speak of how proud I am of HBS being 5,000 members. Not because
that's crazy.
Well, not because we need the numbers, or not because numbers are important, but just it's remarkable. It's worth noting. Like, oh my God, this group is a beast. And I remember when I first did the first Whiskey Social, we capped it at just under 300 people.
Yeah.
And when I was telling people we're going to double in size for year two, the year that you guys came and we had this amazing time, maybe a little too much of an amazing time for some of us. And I got a lot of remarks before the event that, oh, why would you want to double in size? The event's going to go to crap, whatever. I'm like, it's still only like 700 people. Like, it's not even that much. And Gene Beck was one of them. Gene was like, don't do it, man. Don't go back. And now the group's 5,000, and it's like every few months we hear some like, it's too big, it's too big. Okay, but it's this. You were saying that when we were 1,000.
Yeah.
Like it's. But my whole point of all this is that even though we are the largest single market group in the nation, we're nothing compared to the beer scene. I mean, where you see 7,000, 10,000 members, and it's not just one group; it's a bunch of groups. And
but I would say, and what I have so much respect for what you've built and the scene that you're and the community that you're cultivating.
I mean, Travis is a big part of it.
Yes,
I mean, everyone,
yes. And I love how magnanimous and humble you are. That's wonderful. That's great.
I'm more humble than anybody you've ever met.
Well played. But you know, the character of the conversation on the Facebook group and every conversation I have at all your events are always amazing. And so it's positive. It's real connoisseurs. It's people having really interesting conversations. On the beer side of the equation, we see a lot of this kind of like negativity.
It's something you fight, and it's something that I've realized not to freak out about. I've said this before on the show that a lot of people who are in the industry aren't used to these group ideas. Most of these groups have for a long time been, at least in this market, have been just consumers.
Yeah.
And this is the first time you're seeing all levels of the industry, everything is all together in one place. And it's very uncomfortable for some brands. They're not used to the transparency, the honesty, the snobbiness, the jerks.
Let's call the spade a spade, though, because in the beer industry, I see a lot of my compatriots and founding brewers just saying really negative things about the customer in a response. And I'm like, I had a beer advocate account like 18 years ago before it was legal for me to drink. Like, I was the keyboard ninja, like, you know, wannabe connoisseur. Before opening the brewery, I spent all this time on bar stools.
Sure.
I was
a lot of them start that way.
I am
right?
still a beer nerd. No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think a lot.
You don't
of
think
people,
a lot of current craft beer like Ingenious? They all started as nerds.
Now, we're seeing a wave now of hobbyists who are going into the craft a little bit more. You know, maybe they're hobbyist plus,
sure,
if you will. But in terms of like mid-major brands and the ones that have the funding to really scale,
we're
seeing dumb capital chasing PowerPoint slides and don't necessarily have that heart. You know, that's why I felt like on that trip,
you were so disappointed.
Yeah, like 10 Barrel didn't have heart. You could tell it wasn't brewed with passion and love. You know, and it's so kitschy and unicorn chasing for me to say that.
But
it shows. It plays out in the liquid. You know,
I'll tell you this, and I hope he's not listening because I don't mean any offense to him, but I had a meeting yesterday with a brand, a distillery. And he simply asked me, he said, do you think it means less to people? There's two reasons to get into the industry, right? There's two. If you want to start a brand, whether it's whiskey or beer, start it for money or for passion. And I said, first of all, I don't think the two are necessarily mutually exclusive. I think you can do both.
Yeah.
But I think I don't think there's nothing necessarily inherently wrong with wanting to start just because you see money there, as long as you put the effort into the product. If your focus is money, but you're still producing a great product, then you've no problem, no harm, no foul. But if your focus is money and you're just putting out garbage, then you're a problem.
Yeah, I think there is still harm, foul if you're leading with a profit motive before the product motive. And that's coming from someone who has a lot of other – I mean, you know, there are a lot of different things that all of us could be doing if we wanted to solely make money.
So what's the harm?
What's
the harm?
The harm is that every single time, it will always come down to a coin flip where you have to follow one value or the other.
That's what you're saying. And you feel like it's gonna win.
It will always happen. It will always come down to a moment where your values will be tested and you will come up with your true colors. And if your initial thought was always
financial bottom line.
Like, I mean, let's not mince words. I mean, sure. At the end of the day, like, what are we looking for in terms of money as founders, right? I want to put, you know, I don't have kids or, you know, girlfriend, really.
It's a few strip clubs.
Well, none that are legally recognized in the 48 contiguous states. Alaska was a really weird.
It was a real weird weekend.
There's no proof.
And there's like two good breweries up
there. That DNA test was not fully sanctioned by anyways, but the greater point is, yes, I want to put my kids through college, want to not have to worry about the things that, you know, my mom worried about being a single mother on welfare growing up and raising two kids, you know?
Sure.
Like, so you want financial stability.
Sure.
And that is totally fine, right? That is not a bad thing. That's what all of us want, right? And so we all have to do jobs. We just happen to choose this, right?
Sure.
But if your passion is a liquid and you do it well, the money will follow. It's not really that hard it's not a hard equation.
Sure.
But every single individual that I've seen, and I'm not going to call anyone out by name.
I'm enjoying it.
No, every individual that I've seen that you can tell is profit seeking before beer seeking. You know, like I had an individual who founded a brewery and he had told me, he drinks Coors Light at home. Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, I get shit face and eat Taco Bell. Like, I'm not above any sort of trashy sort of things behavior. Going in my mouth. Yeah. We all know
I watch, right? Roseanne. I get it. Right? Yeah.
So, but this individual, so he read an article that craft beer is hot and that's why he and his family decided to put the money in. Well, they're not in business anymore. And I'm not trying to say negative things about him.
You're just saying crow. You can see why.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I wake up and solely motivated to do this. And 7 years in, we're both working, 80 hour weeks? Like,
I backed off a little bit now that I have the kids.
Yeah, I'm down to 70 hours a week.
I've told people before, the first 2 years of a newborn child, which is totally off subject. I'm just going to interject this real quick. The first 2 years or the first year of a newborn is the closest you'll ever come to divorce besides getting divorced.
Wow.
So it's such a hard year on a marriage that I don't think enough people realize that, and no one tells you about it. And me and my wife are super happily married. We're totally fine. But it is this remarkable thing that happens with newborns. I have no idea about what's going on in your marriage, but in my mind, so far, everyone I've ever known to have a kid, I always ask them at the end of that year, like, hey, how was last year? you've got to cut back on the hours, man. I mean, if you want to, I mean, not. If you don't have a marriage or any of these obligations, do the 100-hour weeks. But I did it for years, and I've had to cut back just because.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing how fast time flies. I mean, our kids are already. Sometimes you look at your 3-year-old and you're like, Jesus, you're going to be in school in no time.
Man, I thought we were going to drink whiskey, but now I've got life.
Now we're getting sad. well, grab some Froak.
Back to strip clubs.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. And you know, it's not 70 hours every week. But the greater point that I was making is
that I totally took off the rails.
When you've stacked up 50, 60-hour weeks, 10, 13, 20 weeks in a row, and you're hour 14 into a 16-hour day, and you're faced with a decision – and it is a fundamental decision. If you are motivated by the product, you will break in this direction. If you're motivated by money, you will break in a different direction. It is fundamentally true. And I don't share the values of the people who will break in the wrong direction.
Sure.
So
how very matter-of-factly you presented that. Like it seems very clear. Because when I was asked the question, I thought, no, I mean, I get it. But I know in this particular case, the guy that had the financial backing partnered with his brother who had the passion.
Yeah.
And now now that you say that, if it does come down, I can see those brothers fighting a lot, you know? Now,
I have investors, many of them, who are purely profit motivated. That is a wonderful thing for an investor to be. That's what investors are supposed to be. This is capitalism. We're not in France. It's awesome. We believe in these things, right?
Sure.
But I have creative control 100%, and I also have that long game, and I also have Ryan, you know, that I have to – he has to look me in the eye and respect my decisions every day, and we have to make these decisions together.
Sure.
So, you know, he is 100% motivated on product, no questions sure. asked on that. And then I'm in the middle. Every time he has a question, I'm – like it's imperative that I don't run the numbers on the decision, but rather run that long-term strategy sort of thought.
Sure.
Where it's like, our brand's worth more than 10,000. Dump the fucking fermenter and let's move on. I don't care. Sorry. Mark that. Mark it foul. Well, I was over the line, Donnie.
I was checking to see if he wrote it down. He wasn't writing it down. I was like, oh, write it down.
It's so fluid. I can't help it. I'm fine. So sorry.
That's one thing I love about these shows is we get to have an honest conversation. And you mentioned that Ryan actually watches. So shout out to Ryan. Hey, buddy. Yeah. I think that it's imperative of people just getting together and just having these – you know, sometimes when you get online, intentions get – listen, I am – I consider myself a pretty eloquent speaking person. My diction is pretty clear. But when I get online, I can't tell you how many times people misinterpret my perspective through text. And I've – my day job – kind of trains you on how to be – because they tell you, you know, when you write an email to somebody, they're going to read it. And especially with something negative or critique, you know, criticizing,
yeah,
they're going to read it in the worst possible tone of voice in their head. So you have to be mindful of that. And I still, even to this day, have had people and friends that misinterpret my intentions or my perspective, especially if I'm playing devil's advocate on something. Like if you're trying to, I don't even know how we got in this perspective. Why did I bring this up?
Because I dropped an F-bomb fluidly and we're talking about how awesome fluid conversation is.
Listen, man. I'm a horrible interviewer. my point is simply that these conversations come across 100% how they're intended.
Yeah.
And that's why I like to have the show is that we can have these discussions and it just be
– That's the problem with the character of the conversation just globally in our world right now, right? Like if you can sum it up in 150 characters, then it's not worth talking, right? Like you can't sum up these things in a tweet. It's just that simple. Like – and then all the politics that are happening on Facebook and the conversations in these groups, it's like, well, I can't answer that with just – one sentence.
Sure.
Like,
and then you've got to go back and forth for an hour. Yeah. And in the meantime, you're misinterpreting that 150 characters each time.
And you're getting fired up and distracted. And then you're like, wait a second.
Then you call someone a Nazi.
I actually love this person. Like, it's ridiculous. Every time I talk, you know, any of this sort of stuff, direct face to face with people, you're like,
it always goes right. I never have that problem face to face unless the other person's drinking a lot. Sorry, can we cut that part off? Can you just bookmark that?
What?
9 minutes, 30 seconds and cut out 10 seconds of it.
Are you saying that?
I was specifically referencing something.
You know what I really enjoy about the group is, passionate? Is, you know, the politics seems to be
almost
excluded. Like,
yeah,
it's non-existent.
Completely,
it's not.
Yeah.
It's
well, I guess
everybody kind of feels the same way. Sick of it.
No, not at all. Right now, the Brewers Guild is in this bitter fight against the distributors over beer to go, and
which is where I'm going to slight the distributing tier. I mean, sometimes you forget your purpose.
Let's unpack distributing tier, though. Are you saying that every single individual is just painted with the same swath of color? Because that's a problem with the way the Brewers Guild is approaching it. They're playing tic-tac-toe.
The entire idea of a distributing tier. What's that? The entire idea of the distributing tier is a bit ridiculous. It's only because it's forced upon you.
Oh, man. We could spend 2 hours getting really drunk. And I advocate the three-tier system vehemently. The three-tier system is the only reason we exist. If Anheuser-Busch could own all the way through the supply
Lots of countries do it without.
What's that?
Lots of countries do it without.
Try and buy craft beer in London. Try and buy craft beer in London.
No, look, don't get me wrong. The idea – my simple complaint is that you're forced to. that you have to. If you want to, I know that like in beer, you can self-distribute or you can use a distributor. With spirits, you don't have that option. And honestly, without the three-tier system, a lot of startups probably wouldn't happen because they don't have a way to get their stuff out there unless they're loading it up on their truck and taking it to a store, each store, all over
the self-distribution carve-out of the three-tier system here in Texas is the reason that we exist and the reason we got momentum, and we did it perfectly. We distributed 50,000 cases in the greater Houston area ourselves, self-distributed. That's huge. It's ridiculous. It's bigger than like solely owned distributors that have multiple SKUs. We did that with one brewery. We did that for me out of my pickup truck. So the carve-outs that exist in the industry are great already.
That's a massive luxury that we don't have.
I know. And that's something that we need to talk about.
So the three-tier system helps you in that way because they take that burden off you, even though you're being forced to take that burden off you.
It can, you know, but I think it was the Mike Cameron interview where he mentioned, you know, the number of brands in Texas. And it's been a couple of years. I just turned it off. You know, it's not something that I really watch or pay attention to.
Sure.
But, you know, the number of distributors hasn't increased. The amount of shelf space hasn't increased. So if you're forced to go through a distributor and you can't, if you're starting up and you're a small business and you can't load up your truck and go sell to a liquor store, so it can hurt you too.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? And I agree. Look, there are all kinds of issues with the three-tier system. The thing that I really want to dial in on with the whole conversation though is really the rhetoric and the idea of painting everyone in a simple swath, you know?
Yeah, but because in this specific case, you're talking about the beer to go thing, right?
Well,
the fact that I can only get two from his distillery.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so we're already capped. So we've got a cap that exists.
And then there's this other thing, and then there's this other thing, and the big breakthrough for us, you know, when we're able to sell on our own premises. These are big breakthroughs, you know. I'm talking about everything in concert. The negotiations in Austin are broken down and they've been busted because we create this brinksmanship and we create this us versus them mentality, painting people with negative rhetoric instead of bridge building. And there's so much bridge building to be done. I know that my two distributors here in Houston, Houston Distributing Company and Faust Distributing, you know, the two owners of those two companies, Bo and Don, are two of my most like incredible supporters. They're phenomenal personal supporters too. When I'm having trouble just as a young founder getting his head right around an organization that's bigger than I can control, they're there as steady hands, having run companies, giving me deeply personal advice, and it's amazing. And it's almost having a board member that's also your customer.
Sure.
So if you can see individuals as human beings and treat them well and talk to them as if like they're human beings, then wonderful things happen.
Right.
It's a little kumbaya of me to say it like that. But what's happening right now is then we're like, distributors are the problem. They're not the problem. Distributors, the thing that the distributors are nervous about are the same thing that we're nervous about. I don't mean to like put words in their mouth, but imagine a situation where you own a company where 90% of your revenues are coming from a single supplier, and that supplier can fuck you over, can mess you up anytime. Sorry. Anytime they choose
to. One per segment.
Right? Anytime they choose to. Or like in the wine and spirits world where there are no franchise laws. Yes, please. There are no franchise laws. So they can just – you can just pull your rights and switch horses after they've invested all these years, right? So why would they keep investing? You know, if you start really digging into that tier and understanding the reasons why that they're making decisions in this way, then you're like, okay. So your major issue is a monopoly, right? Think about this. Anheuser-Busch, the largest brewery on the freaking planet, bought out SAB Miller, right? South African Brewers Miller, the second largest brewer on the planet. And where was the DOJ during that conversation? Where was the government talking about antitrust laws? A single entity can now control 80% of volume in the US. Come on, man. That's anti-competitive.
So hold on. We've got to take a quick break, but I do want to summarize what you're saying essentially, and that is that distributing tier is so necessary, and the good outweighs the bad. is essentially what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now,
is this where we wanted to go with the conversation?
Oh, no, no. I'm sorry. No, this is.
I don't think there's any goal.
I've been having.
I don't really have a goal in life, so that kind of works.
The whole idea of the show is what happens when we get together, anyways.
Yeah.
So these conversations happen. They're incredibly in depth, and they're a bit pulling the curtain back for a lot of consumers who don't know. So yes, this is exactly what I'd hoped, is to get two guys together that are willing to talk. But as far as this goes, I'm with you 100%, but would you not need to differentiate so listen, coming from someone who misspoke or misspeaks quite a bit.
I don't know about misspeaking.
But saying one thing but meaning another, right? Yeah. So when someone's talking about how the distributors are the problem, should you not differentiate their intentions, their real meaning, and separate the consumer who says that phrase and means specifically the issues that are the problem versus the consumer who's ignorant, meaning they simply don't know any better and are trying to get rid of that tier altogether completely, that good people can do bad things or that –
I would say this. When you're talking about the consumers, I'm not faulting a consumer for their speech. They can say whatever they want. At the end of the day, a consumer who is a big fan of what we do is maybe not necessarily as informed of how the sausage is made. And so, you know, I don't really begrudge the fact that someone who's, you know, isn't necessarily 100%. You know, you shouldn't read a novel or a reference document to understand it, right? But I'm talking really about the suppliers, and I'm talking about people in my tier. I'm talking about brewery owners.
The first tier, yeah.
I'm talking about brewery owners who stand side by side with me and have the same level of skin in the game and the same level of requirements for less reckless rhetoric. And I would say that no, the distributors themselves aren't able to differentiate. They're not able to differentiate. It's like you said, all distributors are bad. I'm not saying you said that. I'm saying that the suppliers is saying over Twitter, all distributors are bad. They're blocking us. They're the worst in the world.
Sure.
In one side of their mouth. And then the next morning in the sales meeting, they're like, hey guys, I want you to grow my brand 20%, 30%.
Asking them to help grow your brand at the same time, crapping all over them.
You just spent last night trashing me over social media. Why am I supposed to help you out now? I would never say that about a customer. The thing is, the fundamental problem in our supply chain is that people are looking at distributors like they're FedEx, and they should be looking at them like they're a customer. You know, every time I say
that happens both ways though, at least from the spirit side.
Thing to do because again of that it's that requirement, you know, with spirits especially, you know, it's that requirement. Look, they provide a most valuable service. I don't want to be running trucks. I don't want to be running sales staff and invoicing all these different
a lot of
accounts.
Startups wouldn't be able to start up if they had to self-distribute. I totally get that, and I've even said often that United specifically, our good friends Got Crown Over, which the guy's a freaking, like, United catches all this stuff from other people. Scott Crownover is a freaking saint, and if you are a small brand, it is my opinion that the easiest way to get your foot off the ground into growing that business is to go with United, simply because they're going to take a crap ton of your product and put it out there all over specs. It's an easy win when you're a young mm-hmm. brand, but when you're a young brand and you're with some of the bigger guys, and I'm not specifically thinking of anyone specific. Or maybe I am. Yeah.
There's only so many.
Their priorities don't always focus on. I've literally had another. I had a distributor in this room one day, yeah. John Curran, and we were talking about. There have been in those meetings, mm-hmm. they've told brand suppliers that it's not my job to build your brand, that they're order takers, and in that case, that mentality is where I think the distributing tier has become a bit entitled at times.
Well, and I would say that that is a perfect example of when you don't use the word distributor tier to describe them all. Because my two distributors here in town, HEC and Faust, are brand builders, and they're grinding every minute. I had them over to the brewery late last night, and I'm not saying
all distributors. I specifically mean those.
What I'm saying is that rhetoric, like syntactically, grammatically, legit, like. if we were to go to the stenographer, you did say all distributors. And
did I say all distributors? Or did I say
the distributor tier?
That is
so what we
the
need
fact that
to
it's required,
say,
I think, is
why
offensive.
Why don't we just say there are certain distributors?
On our next break, let's go back and check.
Right? No,
so
I would say,
I'm pretty sure
so
what
can,
I said
we can mend
was,
our speech and say certain distributors. We can always say
just
that.
Told you I misspeak a lot.
What? No, and it's not about misspeaking. It's not
Chris,
about misspeaking.
You helped pick it, and you haven't even had any.
For me, the greater point I'm making is like, let's just leave a little bit of room for our counterparties to be human beings, and let's talk about them as human beings, and let's dial down the rhetoric a little bit, and then we'll find a ton of common ground. Because, you know, in my negotiations with my distributors, we've split the pie in a really beautiful way every single time.
Yeah.
I've got two guys who spend time listening and learning. They care immensely. I used to work at Silver Eagle directly for John Johnson, and I know that they do the same thing. They do business the right way as well. In a lot of these angles, there's a lot of hand to hand combat that I don't love, you know. But at the end of the day, our customers don't share our. No one shares alignment, right? Like, we're not all going to agree on 100% of things.
Sure.
So, but let's not fight over the 10% that we don't agree on, you know.
What's that phrase? Scratch your back, you scratch. There's a French phrase, like
quid pro quo.
Quid pro quo. It's not French. It's Latin. My apologies. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If you guys have split up in a beautiful way, you're basically saying that you've seen the benefits of that.
Yeah. What do you care about? This is what I care about. This is what I need to have. This is what it'd be nice to have. You know. So the conversation with the distributors is just like, look. You were worried about a full end around where you're not going to get any aspect. You're going to go out of business if Anheuser-Busch starts selling direct, right? Argument number one, there's a bread factory right next to me where I live on Washington Ave. There's a discount bread store right next to it. I drive by it to go to Kroger because I want to buy other things, not just bread. So the direct model doesn't necessarily work.
That's a great example.
Let's look at a vertically integrated example. So Apple was a manufacturer, then also vertically integrated into retail by owning Apple stores. They release iPads exclusively through their network, and Best Buy says, hey, I think you forgot how big my dick is. And then Apple's like, oh, yeah.
Is that allowed?
And then Best Buy.
One per segment. You want to go into the F word
now? And then Best Buy is like, hey, I just realized that I don't have to sell any Apple products whatsoever if you want to compete directly against me.
Best Buy said that?
I mean, they could have.
I mean, real quick, for those who don't know, what's a Best Buy? They're not around anymore. Today's youth has no idea who they are.
So when you're driving to Blockbuster and you look right
past the red box.
Right past, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you're going to Blockbuster. Yeah. And you might have seen them they sell a lot of fax machines. But the greater point is if you're a manufacturer who vertically integrates into retail to compete against your number one customer, your number one customer will take you out with normal market forces. If we only release the exclusive cool things through our tap room, I can't then go to Justin Cody, who has supported me every day for 7 years, and then sell him my trash, right? Justin, who, you know, buys for all of specs, is going to be like, Raz, come on, man. I want some of that good stuff too.
Sure.
And so you're going to release through multi-channels to get to the end consumer that runs the whole organization.
Sure.
At the end of the day, we're all in service to the customer.
That bottom line.
The customer is king. And if our customer's happy, then everyone's happy. And my customer is coming to my tap room and they're saying, hey, I want a six pack to go. And it's just a six pack. They're not looking for discount rates. If I start discounting against HEB, HEB is going to be like, hey,
what the heck?
Exactly.
That's what I've
We don't need to sell any of your beer anyway, since you want to take the fight right at us. No, we just want to sell an extra six pack to the customer who just wants to continue the party once they get home.
Sure.
And they don't want to stop at, you know, this place or this place. Maybe they wouldn't even stop. So maybe we're creating a new drinking occasion, you know? So if you frame it in that conversation and you're talking to the distributors and you're like, your major concern is being completely cut out of the deal, let's add a cap, let's add the right cap, and that's fine. And it starts at two bottles, and a couple of years from now it becomes four or it becomes more, you know?
Two's two's annoying a month.
It is, especially when you have multiple products. And we, you know, we've got guests that come from literally all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, all over the world, and they would like to take, you know, one of each.
Two of my best friends are in town for the anniversary party, and if I don't give them one of those bottles today, they won't be my friends anymore.
Sure.
I've got one at home, and we'll be drinking it tonight. So I agree. And they go and they want more than two, and it's like, well,
we can't.
Yeah. But that's why I don't think it's appropriate to paint all distributors with a simple brush with this geared up rhetoric.
No, I need to know. At this break, I'm going to go. Let's go back. Can we go back and look or is it no?
Oh, no.
That's not how it works.
Oh, no.
I have to know. This way. It's fine. No, because I'm almost positive what I said entire idea that the distributing tier is required is what pisses me off.
To be clear, though, my beef is with my compatriots in the guild and the rhetoric that they choose to be pushing out.
How long have you been sitting there waiting for me to say something about the cinema? Sorry, I'm listening to but he gave me a look right now.
No, this is
when
so much
when did we
better.
Taste it last? What, seven, year, 8 months ago? A year ago?
A year and what month is it? A year and 1 month ago. It was in December.
And all you guys were saying it was ready to release then.
Yeah, and you waited another 7 months, 8 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
He
was looking at me
all.
Like, are you going to say something about my
– No, the liquid interrupted.
I don't care if you endorse it, but – You were involved, man.
No. This is absolutely. I remember a distinct cotton candy note on one of them. Or birthday cake was what one of them was.
They're all different, you know. That one is just super chocolatey.
Well, let's talk about y'all's collaboration for this, because this is the first time a brewery and a distiller came together to actually distill something together. Walk us through the entire thing from start to finish.
Well, we've been buds, or Sewell, Ryan, all of us. We've been buds for a long time, you know, and. You know, got in kind of at the same time, and I don't even know how this came about. It just
I do have a picture of Travis with a cigar in his mouth pouring liquid into my mouth directly
off of
a
barrel. That was brandy. That was our 2 year anniversary. That was brandy. Yeah. A little small barrel of brandy.
Yeah, so that was many years ago, and I'm pretty sure this collaboration started with man, and we gotta work together.
That's how most things start.
That you don't have to bleep that. I self bleeped. Right.
I told that to my wife. That's how we got together. I love you, man. Don't ever leave me.
But you know, I think it plays out in the liquid, because you can see, and you can just see the authenticity of it, where it's just like it's just two bros on the playground playing football. You know, like
so those who don't know, you actually mashed at his facility.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Walk us through the whole thing.
It would have taken me a week and a half probably to produce that same amount, and they let me use their place to do it. We had the grains delivered there.
Yeah.
I came down for one of the days.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it was the first day.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, it was horrible. Fortunately, we have employees who actually do things, because I think it was two in the afternoon.
Because y'all didn't do anything.
I think it was 2 in the afternoon when Ryan sent me a text. He's like, hey, man, Travis is really hammered in my office and I need to do this. Like, okay, yeah, that's fine. it was awesome. Our teams were actually working, and then we were just like wrecking balls. It was very bad. I think, actually, now that I'm thinking about the effect of working with you on my personal life and self-respect and dignity, maybe we shouldn't collaborate more.
Yeah.
Well, this is your first go at a single malt, yeah?
It is.
And fairly successful. I mean, this was very well received. I've heard nothing but good things from everybody involved. Yeah. The consumers have talked about it constantly. And you mashed from conception. Now you posted recently, as a side note, you posted recently that you and Stuart, your compadre, your right hand man over at Whitmire's, guys were distilling one night or doing something, and he had mentioned we should do a rum. I have been saying that for 2 years.
Well, you know, a lot of people have, and I mentioned earlier the Diageo thing, the Myers rum thing.
Yeah, you know,
so we had to amend our trademark because I guess our name's too similar. And
Whitmire's rum, I could see being a very close.
Yeah. You know, so we don't want to, you know, step on Diageo's toes.
Yeah.
They've got their own troubles right now.
Anyway, so yeah, rum has definitely been hanging out there, and this is rum country. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
And so
the group has definitely shifted. I mean, I've been a big proponent. The group started off as a Houston Bourbon Society, and it's basically the Houston Barrel Age Society. Anything that spends time in a barrel, whether it's a beer or a rum or an Armagnac right now. Have you tasted it yet?
I was hoping you had some.
I didn't bring it because I'm not bragging. I'm just telling something I'm excited about. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
My favorite comedian of all time was a guy named Tom Segura.
And
he's in town tonight.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's inviting me backstage to drink. He's into whiskey. And I tried to get him on the show, and they did a show in Dallas last night. So I'm going to pick up a bottle, another bottle, because you've already opened and killed one bottle of the Armagnac to bring tonight. But I left the house late this morning. I was like, I got to get here by 10 because we're doing the show. So after we do this, I got to drive to my side of town, pick up a bottle of the Armagnac, and then come back to this side of town.
How many bottles did you end up with?
Of the Armagnac?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I bought two. Oh, sorry. We're in a second. I bought two. I plan on buying another case today. I just haven't gotten around to it.
And Randy really bought 40 bottles?
Is that true? He bought 42, but there's a lot of, you know, national groups that we're in.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of other...
So he's kneeling for...
A lot of people of influence that he's friends with. It's like,
hey,
can I... You know, I mean, you guys are company owners. I know that there's people who have been like, hey, can I get a this or can I get a that? So he bought up 42 bottles to send out to his appropriate friends who've pulled favors and cards for him. He's really good friends with the guy that does, and I won't say his name on here because he are, can I have one of those napkins? He specifically asked me not to, but the guy that does California Gold. California Gold, if you know who that is a guy out of, I assume, California that – is famous for blending his own bourbon. He doesn't make it, but he will bottle and wax his own and kind of sell it to friends at cost. So he's not making money, but he's also doing something kind of crazy illegal. And he's kind of been famous for this little private proprietary secret blend. And everyone knows, like, oh, have you ever had California Gold? You know? so he, there's, few people who've been like, hey, can you hook me up? So a long time ago, he had already said he had planned on buying 42 bottles. I will tell you that I'm sure he's buying at least two cases for himself. So 12 bottles at least for himself. It's an incredible Armagnac, 18 years old. And we had a discussion last week with Evans. People are wanting to buy a $175 bottle of 14-year-old Boone County bourbon. And when you know the cost involved with that, and you know that it was selling for $100 last year, but you're hesitant to buy an 18-year-old Armagnac at cash strength for $175 or $180.
Yeah.
That's where the consumer kind of drives me nuts a little bit, where you're like, you're not making sense.
The consumers don't make sense.
Sometimes.
No, we don't. No one does. Even in your own life, you just don't. If you look in the mirror at your own decisions, you just don't do it. You know, you don't make sense.
I look at my four beautiful kids and I'm like, what was I thinking? It was a horrible mistake. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm talking about the fact that, like, you know, I was on my PlayStation and I was like, I don't know, Madden.
I love 19. The fact that you're a PlayStation guy and not an
right?
Xbox guy.
I'm like, okay, Madden 19
just moved
is
up a little bit.
Yeah, like, Madden 19 is like $70 and Madden 18 is like $30. Okay, well, I'm going to go to Madden 18 to save the $40, right? So that's what I did. And then that night, go buy like a $50 scotch and not even care for like 2 seconds.
Right.
Because you're like,
that's that whole argument over.
You make no sense.
If you buy something on Amazon for $20 with free shipping, it's not a problem. But if it's $15 with $5 shipping, you're like, screw that, I'm out.
That's what I'm talking about. So, and it's the psychology of the decision.
Sure.
It's just impossible to understand. And anyone who thinks they're rational is wrong. Anyone who's marketing to consumers that they think are rational hasn't spent enough time actually looking in the mirror themselves, or, you know, whatever. Like, but all the answers are just in yourself. If you just watch the way you shop and you're like, I have not bought anything at a supermarket that didn't have a shelf tag on it. That's funny. And then I go and I'm like, hey, sales reps, do you have a shelf tag there? No. Well, why didn't you make sure you got the shelf tag right there? Like, because when was the last time you bought something in a grocery store?
You didn't know the price of it.
Even if it's pitted versus like not pitted Kalamata olives, right? Like one's $2.29, the other's $2.99. I'm saving those 70 cents, right? And it's just literally whether the olive has a pit in it or not, right? you're that price sensitive when you're talking about a $3 olive, right? And then when you go to a bar, you're like, oh, yeah, I'll buy a round. I just met this guy. I love him, too. I'm going to buy him a beer, too.
Sure.
And then you're like, well, it was $20. Way to save those 70 cents.
I remember when Houston Haze first came out. And you could find it at a grocery store for $20 for a four-pack. People were like, that's too much. And I've seen people spend crazy amounts of money for bourbon. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, but the beer's not bad. It's totally worth $20, you know? And now they've just done smaller cans. They're doing 12 ounces now. Did you drop the cord?
Yeah, I dropped it. My bad. I'll grab it. Yeah.
How you doing over there, Travis?
I'm good. I'm good. Pacing myself.
Why? Let's see that bottle chug, Travis. That
Jekyll and Hyde.
A Jekyll and Hyde.
Switch.
that forklift Travis is what I like to call him. Speaking of Wild Turkey and Jack Daniels, you mentioned that earlier. The average consumer assumes, because we remember from our college years, that Jack and Wild Turkey was what you got drunk on.
Yeah.
But in the bourbon community, the Wild Turkey is very well respected, and Jack Daniels is, especially the barrel strength, is extremely well respected. But you reach this. It's like these different levels. Like when you first get into whiskey, you assume these are trash. Then when you think you know more than you know, you still assume they're trash. And then later you finally get to a point where you've been in the hobby long enough that you kind of get rid of some of that ego a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with it. I'll be honest with you.
It's a totally different world.
This is unbelievable.
Bottles.
So I'm going to say this. Probably shouldn't. I'm going to say it anyways. When we first tasted it, you were doing the hyperbaric chamber thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the birthday cake, the cotton candy, that note I was getting in one of them. And I took home, before that night that we tasted through them, you had let me taste it. You sent me home with a sample. So it was, I mean, you didn't, no legal ramifications. What's the statute of limitations? But I went home with a bottle of that much of the single malt left after it had been in the hyperbaric chamber. And I came back to it one night, and it was different. And I thought, maybe in my mind, I was thinking, this was a year and a half ago. This is longer than that, because that night was a year and a month ago. I first tasted your single malt like a year and a half ago, like long before that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thought, like, there's something different about it. Not bad, not, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And my mind started going through the process, the whole idea of a hyperbaric chamber going up to 20. I asked you to kind of walk us through it earlier, and we ended up not doing it, but we'll get back to it in a second.
Sure.
But the hyperbaric chamber thing, I thought maybe after a certain amount of time at normal barometric pressure that it might have changed a little bit, at least taste-wise or oxidation-wise. I couldn't quite – I was trying to figure out why I was getting a different note, and tasting it now, this is fantastic.
Thank you.
Like, this is – and you actually – we picked it a year and a half ago almost, or a year and a month ago. And there was a certain point about a few months ago where we're like, what's going on with it? We still haven't seen it. And Travis is like, it's not ready yet. And he doesn't want to release it.
Oh, I'm not going to put it out. Man. Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
You didn't want to release it until it was
ready.
The
entire time, our collaboration's in the tanks. I'm like trying to call him, or like, hey, man, how are things going? They're like, hey, I'm really busy. I'm like, hey, is that ready? Is it ready yet? I was like in the kids in the backseat, like, are we there yet? Travis like, shut up. We will get there when we get there. And you will love it, God damn it. You're going to have fun.
The fact that you waited until it was perfect was apropos. Like, this is such a great little gift. We call them taste treats in our house. When your wife's cooking a meal and, you know, she's making something great, and you just go in and you take little bites. Like, that's what that is. Just little taste treats, little perfect, little bold, beautiful single malt. And it was your first go at it, which, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
All right. So, now that I'm done ranting, walk us through what happened, how it came to be. The barometric chamber, for people who don't know.
Yeah, so the hyperbaric chamber thing is just a weird story. We had a guy, he's an out of work, he captained, I don't know all the terminology, but he had a couple of offshore vessels that he ran, oil and gas. And when oil and gas tanked several years back, he found himself out of work. He's also an adventurist. and he'd climbed Everest a couple of times. Anyway, he had this
a couple chamber. Of times,
only a
yeah,
couple.
Yeah, yeah.
What a loser.
So he's a local, you know, at the distillery. So he comes through and hangs out, and he's like, you know, I've got this chamber in my garage. It's not doing anything, you know. What if we just threw a couple of whiskey barrels in
okay,
there?
Okay, by the way, the last time a regular at the brewery said that to me, it didn't go the same way. I went to the chamber. Anyways, never mind. So dude goes to your place and is like, hey, I've got a chamber in my garage.
Yeah,
it's not
much.
Doing anything.
That's... And it just happened to fill barrels.
Like, do you want
to
come space, look at it? You know? And then you looked at it.
That's... Yeah, yeah. And he brought it up and we hooked the thing up. We put it on a timer. And he used to decompress in this thing, right? So like –
he'd get in there. He'd crawl in there.
He would sleep in this thing.
Wow.
You know.
Goku over here.
Yeah. So
old school reference. So,
I would like to say this got dirtier than I expected, but actually this is par for the course for what I expected.
Can you imagine taking
a dude
DMT,
that has a chamber at his home?
Doing DMT and going to a hyperbaric chamber.
So, you know, we were able to fit 2 30-gallon barrels in there. We had to kind of rig it. You know, because those barrels are heavy, you know, they're
sure.
Especially full. So getting them in and out. But we had, long story short, we had, and I didn't know what it would do. The idea was, okay, well, you know, it might do something to speed up the age. It'll definitely maybe change things. Definitely.
Explain
maybe.
What it does.
So we're sitting pretty much at sea level right here in the age, right? So,
sure.
We put this vacuum pump on this chamber and put it on a timer. So every 24 hours, that pump would kick on, take the air pressure inside to mimic up to about 20,000 feet. And then gradually the thing would drop back down,
sure,
back to sea level. And it did that for 9 months. So I put 2 barrels in there. I mean, and we sealed the thing, you know, so it's not like we were able to open it and
yeah.
check on progress. Sure. I half expected to open that door up and see just whiskey everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
Pull the barrel apart or something, yeah.
Right, right. So, and we had 2 identical barrels sitting outside of the chamber. And, you know, there were 3 different yeast strains, and then there was a one-off. The one-off is the 3T. That's the 102 proof.
Okay.
So.
I would just – I don't mean to interrupt, but I just to give a little bit of context, Travis has been talking about the effect of pressure and being at sea level on the barrel and the effects on his liquid for – 5 years, as long as I've known you, you've been talking about. So like I was almost glib earlier when you talked about the Texas movement, and I'm like, I still don't understand Texas versus this versus that, you know.
Yeah.
But these are the moment, that was the first moment when I started thinking about the actual effect of climate, terroir, and everything.
Everyone's been trying to crack the code of Texas whiskey for so long because it does have kind of a in some people's eyes, not a great reputation because it's just not ready yet, right? There's all this passion and pride behind it.
But I'm a very scientific thinker, and that's all that fluffy stuff that doesn't make sense to me. And then what I love when I hear Travis talking is when he's talking about the effect of like what is only specific to Houston, what is the things that you can only do here in Houston, and then just even as simple as that A/B testing approach where you had the experiment, where you had the control off to the side. People aren't doing that. People aren't doing that enough. And that's what I love about Travis's approach and what is just so amazing. Like, we can talk about how great the liquid is. That's the last piece, right?
Sure.
But the pieces leading up to that is that scientific approach of, I'm not going to just, like, who goes and tries out a chamber in the first place? But then also,
yeah, especially
like, I'm not just
first go at it.
I'm not going to just
first go at it and you're like, eh, well, why not?
But not just like, I'll try it. I'm also going to have a control off to the side. And market and
sure.
Do, because like we tasted, you know, Ryan brought 4 mason jars with your chicken scratches on the top to my place, and I didn't know what the difference was. We just did double blind taste tests to say, oh, this is the one that we liked of those 4 mason jars, and then I think it went back to you, and it'd be fun to like know what that permutation is, you know.
Sure.
But I don't think people are doing double blind taste tests with controlled experiments to that level. So I just don't want the casual listener to hear how casual and awesome Travis is and miss the fact that this is unfiltered straight genius. Like, I've never heard anyone do anything like that. Have we ever heard
straight genius?
Have we ever heard anyone do that?
UFSG. I'm going to get you a shirt made.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's something that we've been and we're up against it now. We've got to do something, but you know, we're still 100% family owned and operated. Oh, yeah. We don't have any outside influence. We haven't taken any outside money. Mm-hmm. And I know as soon as you do that, you know, well, it's going to influence the product. And how much is it going to influence the product? Yeah, I mean, I don't have the most output. You know, I'm not
sure.
Obviously not. But
you're sitting in a nice position to be able to still innovate at will. And innovation at will is going back to the whole discussion over when you have so much behind you where that kind of forces you, financial decision versus creativity. You're in a great little spot there, and you're being able to do really fun, interesting stuff. And to this day, I stand by what I've said for years, and that I think Whitmire's really is my number one grain to glass. Like your juice, your distillate, both single malt and the bourbon in Texas, I think is the best thing that's being bottled right now. Now, there's some other great ones out there that I love, but that's number one. I will say that we have filled 4 full segments, and we're gonna keep going on iTunes only. So this will not be on the Facebook portion. There's just a little bit more to cover before I'm not quite ready for this to be over with yet. So if we're gonna keep going, if you want to check this out, you can listen on iTunes, and that will be completely uncensored. So you can go at it.
Fuck yeah!
And wait, that was still
market, dude.
Oh! That was still on radio. For those who are now listening to the iTunes portion, there was a quick break, but we were discussing controversies within the industry without being specific.
Yeah.
And how the consumer always likes to side when they hear a story of this person or that person being ousted of any kind of company or any kind of thing. And my opinion was strictly that I don't, as a consumer, I never, ever, ever can think of a single time, even when the Bullet thing happened. If you remember when Bullet went through a controversy about a year ago because the owner's daughter, who's lesbian, was upset or said that she was kind of given a hard time during meetings or something. And there, it made this huge story as being like, hey, they're anti-gay. We should be mad at Bullet. Yeah. And we actually, the specific example we listed was the whole MAGA kid thing, right? So this when it was first reported, this kid was being accused of being mean to the Native Americans, or these kids were being racist and saying these things. And then within literally a single day's news cycle, it had been turned the other way. And then it became an argument of, well, let's pull it apart then. But it was all reactionary. Mm-hmm. And my opinion, personally, me, is I never buy into these things and never become emotionally invested. And what I do find myself getting sucked into sometimes is strictly trying to play devil's advocate and telling people to calm down. I really try to – if I get involved in arguments nowadays, because nowadays it's harder for me to ever be involved in an online argument. But when I do get involved, it's me trying to pull the extremes from both ends back to the middle where they belong.
Which is precisely what I'm doing with the guild and the rhetoric, just being like, guys, come on, bring it in.
It's enough to just make you just go back to, man, I don't care about any of this. I just want to take this thing, make a product, feed my family, and
sure,
to hell with all this.
That's why I don't go to guild meetings anymore, and I'm not like against them or speaking out.
I think it was Chiru that asked me about the Texas Whiskey Association the other day, why I didn't join, and then wanted me to expand on my thread. I'm like, I don't want to complicate my life. And it's like, well, I don't. It's nothing against those guys. Sure. I wish them well. I wish them the best, and maybe someday I will join. But, you know, for right now, I don't want to be involved in that arena.
I don't want to be involved in any kind of vitriol or any kind of rhetoric that's just negative.
Well, because it's also a situation where it's like, okay, on the first of the month, I have to pay rent. I got payroll. You know, we made payroll last Friday, and then 2 weeks from now, I got to make payroll again.
Sure.
So I'm going to focus.
That's a lot of money.
I'm going to focus on these things. I'm going to focus on my employees. I'm going to focus on my product in that order. And I'm going to focus on this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. And if you have a highly prioritized life and you're working sequentially, well, you know, this sort of politics stuff is all the way down the line down here.
Sure.
So
it's not that I don't have opinions on things. It's that we've seen – this is what's amazing about society nowadays is we've seen it time and time again. We see it every time. Mm-hmm. And lately we see it almost every day in which something incendiary, something full of a dynamite stick, a grenade is thrown into the media, public, and everyone reacts mm-hmm. as if what that is the whole story. Mm-hmm. And then later we find out it's not. Sometimes it is the whole story, but it's far more often than not the whole story. And then you get – then all you've done is lost Facebook friends, right? Yeah. All you've done is blocked people or given up on people. And I just – there's too much going on in my life that I'd rather focus on just – it's not hard to love each other. It's not hard to be positive. I've had falling outs with people. I've had misunderstandings with people. Like I said, I misspeak all the time.
Well, yeah.
But it's there's never any hate or vitriol behind any of my feelings. I'm sad when things fall apart.
So we're going to get on the wrong side of a bottle, and there will be hate and vitriol in our
political discussion. Yeah.
Political.
That's why
arguments.
We're only doing one extra segment.
But the greater point
I want to try your beer.
But,
though.
But the greater point I'm making is that it'll happen behind closed doors. And it'll happen with us also just knowing that
we don't see eye to eye.
Really?
No, we don't see eye to eye.
You're more right. You're more left.
The two of us are diametrically opposed.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but it's really a cool thing.
Will you strike me as someone that's very reasonable?
Yeah.
He's a genius.
Not to say
you're
that
sitting
left
in the presence
is not
of a genius.
Reasonable, but
– the left in Washington, D.C. right now is not reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
My friends who are super liberal are not reasonable. I'm like, guys, how about this? How about this idea? Maybe Hillary was just a bad candidate. Maybe she got the shit kicked out of her against a freshman senator 4 years – or 8 years ago, and instead of having a free and fair primary, you had a coronation. Maybe if you had a free and fair primary instead of a coronation –
you would have the
you'd have an investable candidate.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want now. Fuck shit.
What's
George Carlin's bad words?
Maybe you would have a candidate that we can invest in. I'm not saying anything about her gender because I bet Michelle Obama, a black female, would have won.
Sure.
She would have won.
Probably so.
Let's definitely not go down that road.
Was that?
Let's not go down. Let's
keep it. You know what I love about this community? I'll say it again. I've said it before.
I hope this isn't actually a
segment. Politics is largely out of it.
Yeah,
is everybody just kind of coming around this one thing?
Your example is accurate.
I forgot we were actually live on that. I would never say that in public. The greater point, though, is that the two of us as dear friends can argue till we're blue in the face
and
behind
still be friends.
Closed doors.
Sure,
still be friends.
And still also respect because the difference of values are very low. And that's what I'm saying about the wholesalers too and the distributors to bring it back to the industry. I would say that my incentive alignment and our values alignments with every single person who's at least important at Houston Distributing and at Faust, we are 99% aligned.
Sure.
With the 1% being stuff that we can work around, and maybe it's more like 85, but the greater point is we're in alignment. So we need the rhetoric to also reflect that we're basically in alignment and that we're negotiating in good faith with good human beings who are looking out for their best interests.
And if you agree with somebody 100% of the time, you're hanging out with
the wrong person.
The wrong people.
You're wrong. You don't agree with your wife 100%
of the time. I agree with my wife 110% of the time. I love you.
Yeah, of course. This mic is on.
She does not listen to this. Do you have a bottle opener with
you? Yeah, of course. Come on now.
I've not had breakfast, so your beer is going to be a nice little
I think we should get lunch if you guys have time.
Quite the breakfast.
I've got to meet with you don't know Doug Harris. I've got to meet with my – I have a – this is so –
You want to get lunch?
Pompous.
What's that?
You want to get lunch? I don't get into town much.
Maybe. It depends.
Uh-oh. Go to Boss
Cat. It's okay if not.
Go to Boss Cat and get back north. Go to Boss Cat and get their pork belly.
Their
poutine. It's amazing.
The poutine. I wonder if AJ's around.
I do love
AJ's a huge poutine fan.
Yeah. I love Boss Cat.
Oh, I forgot what we were talking about. This is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
My sister-in-law, one of many, I have five, Sarah is such a huge fan of the Figaro.
Yeah.
And every time she comes over, I think I still got about a half dozen or so or a couple. I don't know for sure. I've got two, and then I've kept the reindeer ones you gave me from years back.
Throw it out. It's
no, no. Well, you gave it to me. So it's been sitting around for how long?
So no, that liquid
is not bad now.
No,
that
liquid
is actually not bad now.
What's that?
I opened one like a month ago during Christmas when it was really cold.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
Yeah.
I was expecting horrible, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. It was kind of sour almost.
Last time I had it, it was horrible. We did a full, you know, talk about consumers being fickle. So we did a full recall on that beer where I offered a 2-to-1. I said, you bring back an empty bottle and tell me you were disappointed, I will give you 2 full bottles of whatever I have in the building.
That's straight up.
I don't
up.
Care.
You know, how often do you hear that? That's straight up. You don't hear that.
You told people that. Like, why are you still mad? I offered you 2-to-1 after you drank
every
the bad
single,
one.
Not a single person took me up on it. So what is happening in the beer side is the
I guess vocal, it wasn't that bad.
The quiet majority, the quiet majority filled with reasonable individuals in person are all saying like, oh, no. Yeah, it happens, right? And then 1 or 2
vocal minority.
And it's just not even a minority. It's an individual. And we could name those names of the individuals.
We have to remember. There's we're just really in the alcohol to. Industry but, and but what the, we're it's, watching it's, and
maybe,
feeling
it's
is.
It's maybe 2 or 3 individuals who, by the way, when I meet these individuals in person, they're wonderful, lovely people that I am. Like, I was that guy. Like, that's why I don't have any sort of animosity towards anyone online, because I'm just like, well, you know, you're just saying that behind the keyboard, and then when we're face to face, it's going to be a different conversation.
Sure,
because we'll have 10 minutes rather than 10 words. You
sure,
know? But it's ridiculous. So yeah, I can man up and say that beer
was a learning. A learning step, like you guys learned that.
It's not where we wanted it to be when we released it, and I wish we had. But you know, we had all the information at our fingertips in the moment, and it wasn't that bad. So
that tastes just fine to me.
Yeah. Was that?
Well, this
that
is
tastes
not it.
Just fine to
there's,
me.
There's nothing wrong with this. This is fantastic.
This is and yeah, I was running late. I grabbed it quick. I was like, I wanted to bring a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh no, this
but
is fine.
I was like,
and this always flies by. Every time we get someone in, I've had people tell me like, "What are we going to talk about for an hour?" It's very easy to fill an hour, especially if you have an opinion on anything, politics, distributing tears.
Well, we didn't
tears.
Even talk about the major thing I thought we were going to talk about that I really wanted to talk about.
Which one?
Well, it's you know, it's truth in labeling.
Oh yeah,
truth.
Is that
truth in advertising?
The beer market as much?
Don't even get me fucking started on that. It's like everyone's talking about this Carbox sellout, and they're like, "Oh, it's not a sellout. It's this or that or whatever." I'm like, if I would challenge them, then if they're not ashamed of the fact that they're owned by Anheuser-Busch, put the fucking letter AB on your own packaging. If you're not afraid of that. Put Anheuser-Busch on your packaging. Why don't you tell the truth about who's brewing your liquid?
Well, can I push back on you on that? Let's have a little tit for tat.
Let's do it.
You can acknowledge that you're not ashamed of something while still realizing – I'm sorry. Let me say that again. You can say that you're not ashamed of something while still acknowledging the financial impact of something based off the average consumer. If you know that you're trying to sell products – we had people – I remember Wade Woodard posted a video of him – opening a can and dumping it in the toilet.
I remember that video.
I remember that video too.
Thought it was hilarious.
You can still be Rasul, who has a passion for his craft. You can still be a beer owner that has a passion for your craft. Sell out for your family, or whatever reason. I'm putting some narrative there. And be afraid to put Anheuser-Busch on there because you know that you're going to alienate some of your audience. But your audience still knows it's been the people that you would ward off, whether or not you put it in the can, they already know it's there.
Yeah. So I would just say that, you know, when Disney knew that the animation desk was not working and they'd come out after like Mulan.
Pixar. Yeah.
Right. They bought out Pixar.
Sure.
Right. Put Steve Jobs on the board of Disney. That is a good example of a big entity acquiring a small entity and having no problem with that cross-brand communication and
sure.
all that sort of stuff, right? And then Disney allowed Pixar to be Pixar, and then they grew and they made Disney better again.
But
right?
is it fair to compare animation to
absolutely
beer snobs?
It's business. Everything is always business. It's always business. We can always look at different businesses. We can look external because everything is the same under the sun. And I would just say
that's why I love this guy.
That I would say it's you know what we're talking about is different animals, but I'm talking about nature and the animal kingdom and the bioecology that governs all animals, whether you're talking about a dog, a cat, or a mountain lion, right?
Sure.
But I would just say that that's a great example of a corporate acquisition, an innovative company acquiring a more innovative company because, you know, Bob Iger, the leader of Disney, understood how important that was. So, you know, I wanted to mention that earlier when you were talking about him being at this beautiful sweet spot of not having to sacrifice a product for profit because you don't have external investors. Well, if you have a strong leadership, then you can still choose product over profit in the short term because you're choosing profit in the long term.
In the long term.
Because you have a viable business forever by making the right product-based decisions today and not letting payroll or a rent check affect your decision-making process, right? So I would just say with Carbach, like
– So just for the record, you're not happy with the Carbach buyout.
I mean, it's not. It's too simplistic to say that I'm happy or unhappy.
No, I mean, it was their plan from day one, and you knew it was their plan from day one, and that's fine.
I have no emotional care whatsoever over it. I'm just saying, fucking own it. Don't insult my intelligence by lying to me and saying that it is this when it's obviously this. Sure. And if you're telling me that, well, we don't want to tell the truth, let's not mince words. Tell the truth. We don't want to tell the truth that Love Street is actually brewed on Gellhorn Drive and this is an Anheuser-Busch facility. We don't want to tell the truth about where that liquid came from because we are worried about consumer repercussions.
Sure.
If you are doing
it's
the messaging
similar to
right,
putting non-GMO or GMO on a label, people were fighting against that, lobbying against that because they're afraid of people's perception of not seeing it on the label.
Well, yeah. Why don't you just give information to the consumer and then affect that information and let the consumer make that decision? You were telling the consumer that they are not smart enough to make a decision themselves, and I'm withholding this evidence and not allowing you to make that decision for yourself.
Sure. We could talk for 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Would you so much fun. You guys come back on?
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah,
Even though I was 15 minutes late,
no,
still have me?
Listen, I'm all for – I don't care about viewership in the sense that I do this because I thrive for the conversations, the stimulating discussion. Mm-hmm. I want you to stimulate me. Just sorry.
Is that?
Sorry.
You want what?
I said I want you to stimulate me. Yeah. Stimulate me. I thrive off the great discussion.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's awesome.
We've got to go. We're a full segment over and then some, and we still have to do an introduction. So this will be essentially about an hour and a half episode, a little less. But I want to have you back on within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I want to continue this road. I want to try more of your beer. I haven't had a Buffalo Bayou beer in at least a couple months. I've been
really?
Trying to, I've been on a little bit of the hazy train since Parrish came over, and I just carbs, man. I'm trying to get back under 230.
Yeah.
So beer has always been this secret love I have, but it always packs on the titty weight. So
well, I haven't had whiskey or bourbon since last night.
No calorie. There are calories. No fat.
Yeah.
No sodium, no sugar, no gluten.
There we go.
Gluten.
I mean, you're talking about there's literally nothing in it except calories. It's the perfect definition of empty calories.
What did I see where Saltgrass had the calories? They didn't have the price of the whiskey listed out on the menu.
But
it was just the calorie count
for
all of their spirits.
Stupid.
Per 1.5 ounces. And it was all like 100 to 120.
Yeah. Stupid. No carbs. I mean, there's nothing in it. So to me, it's a weight loss supplement. So, all right, without that, without further ado, without much more, I appreciate you guys coming in.
Thank you.
We'll do this again soon. I mean really soon, like within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, whatever you want, brother. I'm always here.
If you've got the time, and we don't have to wear sweaters under these lights anymore, but it's I'm burning up right now. My face is so red.
It's pretty hot.
All right, guys, cheers.
You got to take a selfie, though.
I'll bring brandy with me next time.